Welcome to Hypotheticals. Please keep your seatbelt buckled, your hands and feet in the car at all times, and don't forget to pay the toll on the ghost road.
Welcome to this episode of Hypotheticals, featuring Zoe and
Yuri. That is a horrible intro.
Hey.
I'm just saying, it lacks, like, pizzazz.
Okay, hold on. Welcome to Hypotheticals, starring Yuri Alexander and Zoe Von Imbler, creators and writers and directors. They're awesome!
Ow. We're not in the fucking ring, Zoe.
I don't know! You just
we'll have to figure it out.
You wanted pizzazz! I was trying to go for pizzazz!
I don't know. We'll figure it out. I don't actually want something that's, like, so obvious. Just like, hey, if we're doing hypotheticals now, yay.
I was just trying to make sure they had a basis for who was who and who sounded like what.
No, I know, but we're gonna do that in the intro that's gonna get tagged onto this.
Oh, whatever. Well, if there's an intro to this episode, you're welcome. You got two intros.
Yeah, congrats.
Good for you.
Good for someone.
I don't know.
Let's go to IHOP.
Let's go to IHOP? Okay, yeah. Let's go to IHOP.
I mean, it's farther, but it's not Steak and Shake.
Yeah, I don't know about Steak and Shake. I am conflicted.
Steak and Shake is, like, one of those places that I go to after swing because everybody else is going there.
Yeah, I don't really choose to go to
Steak and Shake. Steak and Shake is not like me being like, yeah, I'm gonna go to Steak and Shake. I'm so excited.
Steak and Shake.
Yeah. Hips are killing me.
I don't like their... See, the problem is I just don't like their sandwiches. Their sandwiches are ill.
Their fries are weird.
They're skinny.
They're so skinny. Like, I like having that smush in the fry, you know? Like, you get the crunch on the outside, and then you get the nice smushed potato.
I just had an eye connection with a guy in a car next to us. I looked over, great. And he looked over, and he was like... Yo. He wiggled his eyebrows a little, and I was like, and I wiggled my eyebrows a little, but not like a lot, because like, I'm not like that.
Okay, quit flirting with people in McDonald's.
What? He's cute! I'm allowed to flirt through car windows.
You can barely tell what he looks like.
I mean, that's true. He could be quite unattractive from the neck down, for all I know.
I mean, you can...
He could be wearing a white power t-shirt, and I just couldn't see it.
It's entirely possible.
All right.
Quit flirting with people in the McDonald's drive-thru line.
Listen, it's not my fault. We looked. We had a connection. And by
actually,
a connection...
When I have a connection with someone...
I mean, I looked at him and he looked at me and we, like, our eyes locked.
But usually...
Not like, oh, I want to sleep with that guy. I'm not like that.
No, but usually when I have a connection with someone through my car, it's, please, for Jesus Christ's sake, don't respond. I'm so sorry I looked at you. Don't look at me again.
Did I tell the story about the guy who went after me at the Walgreens? No, yeah, I did.
Yes, you did.
I saw a Walgreens sign in the corner, so I was trying to remember that.
We did discuss that, but we had something planned for this episode.
We did, that's right, until we got distracted by, life. Because we're not really good at keeping on topic.
Super not good at that. Like, uber duber duber super...
We're going to IHOP. Zoe's wearing pajama pants. It's great. It's great. What was that?
I don't know.
What was the point? Did you just flip me off?
No, I did the okay.
Oh, time. You did the okay. All I saw was like fingers and you had like a hoo look on your face.
No, I did the okay side. Anyway. I hate driving in college.
I know. That's because there are people.
I'm like... permanently worried I'm gonna run over a co-ed.
Anyway, so the question was, what is the weirdest source material that has ever been adapted that you know of? What do you think is the weirdest?
Okay, so I had one plan.
You had one plan.
I mean, you did
come up with this episode idea, so go ahead, you go first.
Okay, so the one that I wanted to talk about today, there was a movie created by the same people that made A Monster in Paris, called Jack and the Cuckoo Clock Heart. And frankly, I was confused as to why this happened. It's a cute movie, but the source material is... It's one of those things that if a child is like, I want to listen to this movie and in the album from the movie in its original French, and then they go and they find the band Dionysus, on which their album, the movie, is based, and have nightmares. this musical album includes songs about hamsters dying while masturbating with perfume, while two whores sing Cunnilingus, Mon Amour, nearby.
Okay.
There are some very sexual comments throughout the entire album, which is very generally weird. And honestly, like, I have a problem with adapting what are essentially tragedies to make them happy for, like, family audiences. If it's written as a tragedy, there's a reason it's written as a tragedy. Maybe don't make it seem so fucking happy, because it's weird. This album ends, he doesn't get the girl, he doesn't get anything, he, like...
Other than some unforgettable sights, apparently.
No, because that's the thing, the whole point is he has a cuckoo clock heart, because he... When he was a baby, he was left out in the cold and his heart froze over. And then the lady up on the hill was like, I'm gonna save you, and replaced his heart with a cuckoo clock. And the whole, it's a coming of age story. And it is very much about sex and love and like extreme, like passionate emotions, because he is not allowed to feel them because it would kill him. His heart would not be able to handle it.
Just a your friendly neighborhood ambulance.
I mean, the hospital's right there.
I know.
And it, so like, I mean, I love the album. The music is phenomenal, but it's definitely not kid friendly at all. And the further like storyline, because this is a concept album, and there's other songs on other albums of Dionysus that tie in with this. I mean, it continues past the completion of the first album, where Jack basically realizes that he can't be with Acacia, I think her name is. He can't be with Acacia, and then he just kind of climbs up into the sky. Of course, that song has to end up with something along the lines of "We'll fuck in the clouds," because that's how that all works. And later, he becomes like a giant stone monster. Like, or a giant tree monster or something. Like, it's not a happy story. It's a very, very crude story. And it's definitely not children's material. So turning it into, like, an adorable little, like, children's movie about a kid with a heart that's a cuckoo clock who finds love is just fucking weird. It's really weird to me. Because there's like, a difference between taking something that's common in culture, like, let's say, standard mythology, and deciding to make it less tragedy. For example, Disney's Hercules is trash. But, I mean, it's very fun, but it's also horrible when it comes to the writing. And,
don't say I'm in love.
Please stop it. I don't understand why people like that song. I hate it. And it's I just don't like how it sounds. I think it's very boring. But honestly, like, everybody knows about Hercules. People have heard about Hercules. No one has heard of this fucking band from France and their weird concept album about a boy with a cuckoo clock heart who, like, cannot love or fuck people because that would kill him. And, like, half the songs are about fucking, because that is, like, all that's on his mind, because he's basically being told he can't do it. And that's how everybody thinks. And it's like, why do you... Is really, this is what you want to do? Such weird source material. I can't handle it. Okay. Do you have one?
I mean, my answer was going to be a more general, like... So, one of the ones that's really weird to me is Around the World in 80 Days was originally a novel.
Yeah. Or
it might have been a serial or something like that. That thing has been adapted probably dozens of times. And movies, TV shows, plays, comic books.
Horrible plays.
It's been, like, taken and turned into inspiration. For example,
chill out
the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen and all that kind of stuff.
I like the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Well, see, here's the problem with Around the World in 80 Days. The original Around the World in 80 Days is fucking racist as hell.
Yeah.
It's so bad. It was, people don't understand that literature, people love adapting literature from the Victorian era and earlier. Like, not just, like, novels, books, like, all kinds of shit. And when they adapt it for a modern audience, they leave all the really terrible racist, homophobic, sexist, like, they leave all that shit out because it's not palatable to, like, a modern day viewer. Mm-hmm. So for like example, in almost all of the modern versions of Dracula that you read or you watch or whatever, Mina Harker is like really strong and powerful and she knows what she wants.
Are you fucking kidding me? The women in that book basically did nothing but scream and go, please help me.
Well, no, because see, the thing is, people hold Mina Harker up as being this big paragon of like, this is the very, like, a, and she is a very early example of an independent, modern-style woman.
And she's still damsel in distress.
But the whole problem is that, even not into taking account, she's actually not a damsel in distress. Bad shit happens to her, and she is like, I'm gonna take care of this, we're gonna go. Like, she's instrumental in the takedown of Dracula.
Uh-huh.
Like, just straight up. The problem is, Mina Harker is written as what is called a helpmeet, which is a type of female character that was often written during the late Victorian era. And the idea is that her role in life is to make her man better. So Mina Harker is, she's smart, but she's not smarter than her man. She's strong, but she's not stronger than her man. She's independent. She still needs her man. And so she does things like, she's the one who organizes everything. She's the one who keeps all of the notes. She's the one who, like, she never is the, like, people are never like, hot damn, Mina, you're so great. You fucking saved everybody. They're like, thanks for your help, Mina. And Mina's like, oh, you're welcome. I'm just doing what I thought I needed to do to save us.
Okay.
So, like, in all these modern versions, Mina Harker is, like, a Billy Badass character, and that's not true. Sherlock with, Sherlock Holmes, the short stories with, what's her name? Irene Adler.
Irene, okay.
So Irene Adler only ever shows up in the, I think it's the Hounds of Baskerville or something like that. And she's a side character. And the whole point is that she has, like, other shit that she's doing. And she shows up and Sherlock tries to figure out why she's there and she tricks him. And she leaves. Yeah. Like, she's not really important, like, if I remember correctly, not pivotally important to anything else that ever happens anywhere.
No, and she's everybody not. The whole point of Irene Adler is that, you know, Sherlock gets duped once in a while.
Like, and then, so when you go and you read the original stories, Irene Adler is a smart lady, but she is just like Mina Harker. She's not a Billy Badass character. And the whole reason that Sherlock is mad isn't because he got tricked, because it happens other times. Like, the whole Sherlock series relies on Sherlock Holmes making an assumption about something, and then half the time, something else happens later, and he's like, oh, I was wrong, because red herrings are a thing in mystery stories.
Yep. I prefer Agatha Christie.
Agatha Christie's good. But so with Irene Adler, he's mad that she's a woman who tricked him.
Of course.
That's why he's mad.
No, of course,
because he underestimated her. And he's like, oh, I can't believe a woman got one over on me. She's so smart. And all this bullshit where people are writing in that Irene Adler and Sherlock Holmes had, like, a thing. No, they didn't have a thing. Irene Adler was a woman. Sherlock Holmes was a man. In the original Victorian novels, Sherlock Holmes just did not give a fuck about women. They were not, like, they were around, but he wasn't like, I love all ladies.
Honestly, it kind of bothers me. Like, don't get me wrong, I am very much for, like, Ace Sherlock. I love that concept. But Sir Conan Doyle wasn't writing romance novels.
No, he wasn't.
He wasn't, like, the goal wasn't, oh, Sherlock finds a woman and Watson finds a woman. Like, Watson finds a wife as a plot point to basically make Sherlock sad.
Yeah.
And
also, most, as with all things concerning Watson in the actual Sherlock Holmes short stories, all of the stuff that happens with his wife happens off camera.
Yeah.
He's never, like...
Oh, she never shows up. He's just like, I got married.
Like, he gets married, I think, like, in between two stories. Oh, yeah. And, like, every now and then after that, he's like, my wife, Mary.
Yeah, I think I remember reading it, and I was just like, I finished one of the books, and I went into the other one, and it was like, huh, I guess Watson
got married. Or like, whatever.
Or whatever. Because they're, like, on a train, and Watson's like, yes, my wife. And I'm like...
What the fuck did Watson get married? But yeah, so there's this kind of like,
we could have a really bad memory of everything we're talking about here, by the way.
Oh yeah.
Like, we don't have references. Talking in a car.
I haven't read any of those Sherlock Holmes stories in a long time. But I will fight you about Mina Harker because I read Dracula like 6 times.
Oh yeah.
I had to write multiple thesis papers on that book.
So I love Dracula. But I'm gonna be honest, I was not in a good place when I had to read that book for class, and I mostly had it on audiobook, and I'm pretty sure I missed, like, half of it.
Dracula wants fucking Jonathan Harker's dick.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Well, there's this whole scene, so in the novels, there's this whole scene where the setup is that he goes out, Jonathan Harker, I think it's Jonathan, anyway, he goes out to Transylvania,
which is in Hungary at this time, although Dracula is Romanian, well, kind of,
but they don't really mention, they kind of, in the novel, make Transylvania sound like its own country, sort of.
That's kind of how everybody does it, though. Like, it's always like, Transylvania,
mysterious place. From
Transylvania, beautiful country, and I'm just like, sure.
He gets sent out to Dracula's castle by the bank that he works for. Because if I remember correctly, Dracula is, like, interested in buying something or whatever. Mm-hmm. But he's never been to England.
On our way back, we need to do favorite goofy movie adaptations. Okay. Because I have one for Dracula that I love.
So he goes out there, and he meets up with Dracula in his castle. Mm. And it's really weird, and there's lots of shit that goes on. But Dracula's like, hey, bro, here's your room. Don't leave. Like, the castle can be scary at night, basically.
And then he leaves, and then he comes across Dracula's...
So he leaves, and he is wandering through this castle, getting progressively more and more scared, because, like, it's ancient and foreboding, and there's no lights, and it's very ancient and foreboding.
Because you have to remember, everybody in Eastern Europe and on the Orient, because that's how they describe it in Dracula.
They do.
They live in, like, basically wooden buildings with, like, no electricity and nothing particularly interesting. And for some reason, there's, like, a whole bit about how they put too much paprika in his food and it's super dry, which is not how that fucking works when you make
He also makes a lot of comments about the way people dress and the way people look and how confused they are when they see him because he doesn't look like everybody else. Like, the first part of Dracula is pretty much word for word written in the style of a travelogue, which was very popular to do at the time.
But, I mean, that's a big thing within Victorian literature, is to basically take the East and be like, look how sad these people are.
And I did a paper on the Orient in Dracula, and there's this whole idea at the time in Victorian England that they were actually, the reason that they wrote about the Orient and they wrote about all these mysterious places is because they had this very big stranger danger fear about the Orient and how it was this regressive kind of primitive place that if allowed to roam unchecked would consume Western, the Western, like, yeah. polite societal word. Yeah. So they were simultaneously fascinated with the Orient and fascinated with its peoples and its cultures, and also straight up terrified of them. And when you read into Dracula more deeply, that is what that story is. It is a white middle class guy goes to the Orient and comes back with the
something that's dangerous,
this corrupting yeah. influence. Because the whole thing about Mina and what's her name, the girl who dies,
I don't remember her name.
Yeah, but their whole shtick is that Dracula comes and he's got this, because they remember, people in the Victorian times in the Western world remembered that they didn't used to be the dominant powerful force in the world. Mm-hmm. In the 1200s and 1300s, it was the Orient, the Turks, the Russians, yeah. like the Muslims. All of those people were like really strong and powerful and going through these renaissances, and they had great kingdoms and all this other shit, and they had shit together, and then it fell apart.
Showed up and
it fell apart. And so they still have this memory, and that's one of the reasons why the fact that Dracula is a count.
Yeah.
Is so important, because not only does Dracula represent primitive, supernatural otherness, he also represents the otherness of nobility, of the aristocratic, you know, caste that at this time in England didn't exist really like anymore. Because during the late Victorian era, when Dracula was written, is during the steady, swift decline of the aristocracy yeah. in England, because by that point, you know, Victoria is the queen. She's basically
there's not really much to do for nobility.
Yeah, you know, it's
have their titles, but mostly they're just like sitting around in their big houses and going. Well,
and they're at this point, you know, they're starting to go bankrupt and losing their, you know, losing, because a title doesn't matter if you don't have anything to back it up.
Yeah.
And a lot of people in England who had titles didn't really have anything, because at the time, during the 16, like all the way through the 1600s, landed gentry relied on.
What a fun history show we're making.
I know. landed gentry in that era relied on the people who worked on their lands. They got all of their inherited wealth came from land. But when the Industrial Revolution hit in the 1700s and machinery started overtaking everything else,
the big cities got the power. And then land was kind of like,
eh. Land was great.
Useful for farming.
But unless it had something that was worth something on it. The only nobility that survived the 1800s were the ones who had oil, gas, coal, mining facilities. Like, because at that point, you couldn't, like, force somebody to work your land for you. You had to pay them. And if you didn't have anything that was worth anything, you couldn't pay anybody to work your land. So the 1800s in England was this whole thing where everything was rapidly industrializing. Farms were kind of going by the, like, big agrarian landed gentry farms where, like, dozens of families would all work for one lord, mm-hmm. were going away, because at that point, also, people realized, I can just buy my own land and farm for myself. And this is also the rise of...
get a job in the city and make enough money to just buy food from the dude next door.
So, and this is also the rise of the early 1800s and the late 1700s was the rise of the cottage industry in England, which mm-hmm. was when people started making stuff out of their own homes, like linen and, you know, goods and things like that, and they started becoming more independent. Anyway, so the point is that Dracula represents a lot of different kind of things to the people who are reading it. And so when he comes back, because a lot of people, like, when they think about Dracula, they think about the beginning of the novel or the end of the novel, because the beginning of the novel, they're in Transylvania.
Yeah.
And Jonathan Harker is in Dracula's castle.
It's kind of slowly, you know, it's introducing you. Mm. It's a slow travelogue. And then you get to the point where you're back in England.
And that's when shit hits yeah.
the fan.
That's when,
you know, Mina's friend, whatever the crap her name is.
She gets seduced. And see, that's another thing, because yeah. also the seduction of,
that lady.
That of her, of Mina's friend. Is the seduction of the beautiful, innocent, virginal, white English girl by the scary, strong, dark-skinned, kind of ruffian from the East. Because Dracula is kind of described as being, like, sallow-skinned, which is Victorian for a person of color, basically. Not a black person.
No, but they're talking about people who have yellow undertones or green undertones. Because you have to keep in mind, for the longest time, anybody in the Mediterranean or in the Middle Eastern area was part of the Orient. So even, like, the Greeks were part of the Orient. They were part of dragons be here, you know, like, the scary
Less, and the Italians less so, most
Italians, because Italians were at the point where they were, like, super rich and no one cared anymore. They were part of the Enlightenment. They got everything that they needed.
Pretty much by the time Dracula comes out, anything east of kind of like Austria, kind of that, like Hungary.
Hungary, Romania, any of the
Russia is weirdly excluded from the Orient. The I guess there's a whole thing about why Russia kind of gets a pass as far as the Orient is concerned. I would have to do more research into it, but a lot of people at that time did not consider Russia the Orient.
So the reason that Russia, correctly, I think the reason that Russia got a pass as the Orient was because it retained its czars at this time, and the czars were essentially, you know, with all the, they had nobility that was still happening. I mean, it was starting to fall apart, but it was still there. So they kind of, they were westernized. Plenty of people from the West went to Russia to study. There were a lot of good schools in Russia. Now, when I say Russia, I'm not talking about, like, the whole of Russia. I'm talking about, like, Moscow and St. Petersburg.
Yeah.
Everywhere else was essentially part of the Orient. They were people who still worshipped tree gods, and who still, you know, picked their boogers out of their nose, and that's how they lived. You know, that was the mentality. I mean, it pisses me off a little bit, but that's basically what happened. Is, you know, if you were at the point where you had these big cities and you were creating things, then you were good. And honestly, one of my pet peeves is when the French take the Romanian people and claim them as their own because they moved to France because there were better opportunities in France, because since, like, I don't know how long, Romania has not had a good opportunity to become a power.
You know, we should do an episode where you talk about the Romanian pizza prince.
Pizza? Oh my God.
that's for a different time.
The thing is, like, it would be story time with Erie. Disclaimer, I'm pretty sure absolutely none of this is factually correct.
Oh, you just say.
This is all I remember from random news headlines.
But anyway, I have feelings about literature. Dracula is also a lot more gay and a lot more weird than a lot of people remember it being.
I really like that.
Oh, right, I was gonna finish that story. Anyway, no, he goes out into the scary castle, and he's like, I'm a scared white man in a person of color's weird castle. Woo! And then he, like, opens a room, or a door, and he walks into a bedroom. And he gets, like, this whole scene is, like, written as if basically he's been slipped some molly or something. Like, he's like, whoa!
I imagine it to be something similar to, I don't know if you guys have seen What We Do in the Shadows. When they open Vlad's door, he's like, it's just, he's like on the wall with, like, women in, like, bed.
So that he walks into this room and he's really confused because it's like a woman's room, and there are no women in Dracula's castle. He's not seen any servants. He's not seen anybody but Dracula. And he has this whole moment. And I wrote a whole paper about queerness in Dracula when I was in college.
Fuck having Renfield as, like, already there with Dracula. I don't know why they keep fucking doing that.
Yeah, he's in England. That's the whole point. He's an English man who gets corrupted by Dracula to work for him.
And then, you know, at some point, he dies. Like, Renfield doesn't last forever, guys. Renfield is like a tiny minion. He's a goblin. Someone smacks him, he's gone.
Anyway, so he picks up, I think it's like a mirror or a brush or something, and he has this whole inner monologue about imagining, I'm trying to remember, because I really did write a paper on this. There's this whole sequence where he, like, imagines this woman, and she's brushing her hair, and, like, if you read into it, it can be kind of like he's hallucinating himself as a woman brushing her hair in this aristocratic, like, abandoned room with this, and, like, there's this whole thing where, and then the door, like, opens, and he turns around, and there are these three women staring him down, and he's like, what the fuck? I'm really high and confused right now. And they, like, kind of, like, they pounce on him, and then his descriptions get very confused as to what's happening, and they're, like, it's read in modern times, like, oh, Dracula's wives are trying to seduce him and, like, get him to have, like, all of Dracula's wives and all the versions of Dracula that are, like, modern are, they're all, like,
buxom women.
Buxom women who want the dick.
Yeah. Who are just like, we're going to seduce you and drink
and they're
your
described,
blood.
Yeah, they're described as being very beautiful, and they're described as being ethereal. They're described as being kind of like elven in a way that's terrifying. Like, they're so beautiful. Elves. Yeah, they're so beautiful, they're inhumane in their beauty. And he's just like, he's terrified because he doesn't know what they're doing and he doesn't know who they are and he's very confused and he's just imagined himself as a woman brushing his hair and there's all this stuff. And then all of a sudden, Dracula, like, grabs one of them by the back of her hair and throws her and is like, yeah. He's mine!
Yeah, I remember.
You can't have him! He's mine!
Yeah, no, Dracula has some jealousy issues that he
and then, and then he,
through.
Like, runs them off, and Dracula's like, yeah, I told you not to leave your room. I really did. Okay, go back.
Don't go opening the doors laced with Molly.
And he goes, and then he, like, goes back to his room, he falls asleep, and he wakes up the next morning, and he's really confused, and he thinks it's a dream. But anyway, in college, I wrote a whole paper about how Dracula was totally gay and totally wanted the dick. And how...
Again, that does make sense, because perversions...
Yeah. Yeah. There's a whole, like, there's layers in that novel, and there's this whole discussion about whether or not Dracula was possessive because he was, like, in love with the guy, or whether or not it was, like, an animal thing where he, like, staked his claim to his food, and even when you bring that into it, that can be very sexual, and, like, staking and laying claim and, like, all that kind of shit. Anyway, point being, a queer interpretation of Dracula is super fun. If anybody wants to reread it, pretending that Dracula's too, or not even pretending, just read it with the assumption that Dracula is a gay man, and that, fucking Parker.
I'm not gonna be able to unsee that now.
Sorry. Just imagine that Harker is really confused about his own sexuality and, might or might not be trans, depending on how you interpret some of the scenes. It's a whole thing. In literature, you can, queer read pretty much anything if you try hard enough.
Yeah, and we've sat in this car for about 20 minutes now talking to you guys. About Dracula and...
Let us know if
Eastern European racism.
Erie and I have been thinking about maybe doing another side project where we get drunk and talk about literature. Let us know if you actually would want to hear that.
I am not amazing for literature, but I can try desperately to read what I can.
We're gonna call it Drunk Club or Drunk Literature.
I don't know if we're gonna get drunk. I don't like getting drunk too much.
I'll
but
get
we'll
drunk.
Figure it out.
It'll be fine. Anyway,
Zoe gets drunk while Erie just listens intently.
Okay. Bye, guys. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Dracula the podcast.
Hypotheticals is a Crossroads Stations production featuring Erie Alexander and Zoe Von Embler. Musical theme by Shannon Sawyer. For more information, please visit crossroadsstations.com.